Hi, it's Victor Perton, That Optimism Man, and welcome back to our That Optimism Man podcast. Today, I am delighted we have Jasmine Correa joining us, who is a senior English and history teacher in Samoa. Jasmine is serving the Samoan government as a CHOGM Youth Forum Task Force member, and I'm looking forward to going to CHOGM next month in Samoa. Jasmine is a youth engagement leader for the World Economic Forum's Global Shapers Community and is an alumna of the East-West Centre in Hawaii and Washington, D.C. Jasmine, welcome.
Talofa.
A delight to see you again. And as you know, when you come and visit the Centre for Optimism, the first question we ask everyone is what makes you optimistic? Is it faith? Is it life experience? Is it your mindset or your upbringing?
For me, it's a combination of all of those things. Definitely my faith, which has been very intertwined with my upbringing. I grew up here in very sunny, but also very rainy Samoa. My parents were both teachers, and I think when you're in a field like education, especially, you know, in the developing Pacific, you've got to be very optimistic all the time. So that's definitely something that was ingrained in my brother and I. Also, life experiences. I chose to also have a career in education, something I never thought I'd do, but here I am. And I think, again, when you work with particularly young people, you can't help but be optimistic. You're optimistic for them, but also because of them.
Wonderful. And as you know, I went to Samoa twice last year, and one of the essays I wrote was Liquid Optimism. You could feel it walking on the street, you could feel it in conversation, you could feel it looking to the future. What is it that makes the culture of Samoa so joyful, dare I say, happy, and looking to the future?
We have a saying in Samoa, "Etoyoso fo ilela," translated simply into English, "The sun will rise again tomorrow." So if you have a disappointing day or there's something you can't figure out, we say to each other, "Yeah, etoyoso fo ilela." We think about time and temporal constraints in the way that they're related to the environment, the natural environment. The sun is consistent, you know, it sets, but it also rises. And I think because we have that indigenous foundation in a kind of natural optimism, it flows even into our lives in this very modern and fast-paced world. You know, like any group of people, I wouldn't say we're happy 24/7. We have our challenges. We are a developing country. For myself in education, definitely challenges, you know, with our literacy and our numeracy rates and being under-resourced. But we have that sort of mindset that, okay, today's challenging, but tomorrow's another day. It comes naturally to us. I find myself saying, even to my students, when they're disappointed with a grade they've gotten for an assessment, the sun will rise again tomorrow.
It's beautiful. And so let's focus on the Commonwealth Youth Forum is coming up in a few weeks. And you're one of the leaders in helping the Samoan government and the Commonwealth set the parameters for that. So we're looking for young people to have a voice in shaping Commonwealth policy. So how do you see this forum empowering Pacific youth, and especially Samoan youth, and thinking about climate change and justice? You know, it's a huge opportunity for Samoan young people and Pacific young people in general.
Thank you. I'm just going to apologize. My family have just arrived, so it's a little bit noisy in the background. Thank you for your understanding about that. But in terms of my role in the Commonwealth Youth Forum and the role of the Commonwealth Youth Forum in Samoa, I think first of all, it's just about getting our people to be more involved in the policy spaces, in the rooms where all the governance is happening. in terms of statistics, half the population of the Commonwealth is youthful, 60%. And to think that such a large population is so grossly underrepresented in governance and policy spaces, it's amazing. From that 60%, you've got to think about a large percentage of that is from the developing Commonwealth. There are no big statistics which focus directly on the developing Commonwealth, particularly Oceania. So what I'm really interested in, what our team is really interested in, is getting the voice of the developing Commonwealth, particularly developing Oceania, in through the door. I often find, having studied and worked and lived in both Australia and New Zealand, that when we talk about Oceania in these high-level spaces, it often is Australia and New Zealand. And I understand that, being that these are the two big developed countries in our region. However, we have a very high youthful population in the developing Oceania. That's Samoa, Tonga, Fiji, PNG, Solomon Islands. These continue to be underrepresented. So how I view my leadership role, it's just about amplifying the voice of this part of the Pacific so that it can be included in the decisions that get made. The decisions which get made in these high-level spaces affect our lives. And it's very interesting that we're often not involved in the making of these decisions. My motto at the moment is nothing about us without us. So if it's going to be about us, we got to be in the room. We got to have our voices heard. And those decisions need to also be contextualized so that they are effective when they're implemented in our regions.
I'm now in my 60s, but I started in public policy when I was 16. So what you say resonates with me, and young people have to step up. You know, you step up. You know, your voice is heard. You're getting organised. So 2024 is the culmination of the Commonwealth Years of Youth. So there's been a focus on youth shaping the future of leadership across the Commonwealth. How do you think that's gone? And then this year, with you leading so strongly in Samoa, how do you think it's going to work? Will the King hear this message? Will the Australian New Zealand Prime Minister? I know that the Samoan Prime Minister is hearing your message. How will these leaders hear the message of you and the young people you bring to the fore?
How's it going? Well, we are optimistic. That's what I will say about it. We're doing what we can. We're working very hard on our end. You know, our task force has a local national component. We've also got our international counterparts. So it's really about working together. The Commonwealth does have different regions, but at the end of the day, we are one Commonwealth. So at the moment, we're looking at amplifying our similarities and looking for ways to bridge our differences. Will the King and the major world leaders hear our message? I mean, we will certainly try to ensure that they do. We're doing everything that we can. They are the major decision makers in our Commonwealth Association. We would love for them to not only hear, but listen to what we're saying, and much more than that, to actually put into writing and then have implemented the suggestions that we have tried to make in policy, but also during the CYF dialogues. We will be giving our young people the chance to speak because we want their voices to be heard. We've worked very hard in our policy subcommittee, myself trying to ensure that we put into the declaration clauses and even just the terminology and the jargon which directly connects with our lived experiences on this side of the world. So we're optimistic. We invite His Majesty and all world leaders to come and hear us, but also listen to us. And we're looking forward to seeing them implement and put into practice what we need as a developing Commonwealth and as a Commonwealth, as the Commonwealth as a whole. Just going to talk a little bit about the fact that the Year of Youth got extended. It was supposed to have ended last year, but we feel that people are very interested in hearing what we as Commonwealth youth have to say. That's why they've given us another year. I focus on ensuring that this isn't tokenistic. you know, because we can say years of youth and then afterwards, okay, the year of youth or years of youth are done now. We can go back to whatever it is we were doing before. But we want to make sure that the 2 years we've had in the proverbial spotlight will be effective, not just for us, but for the youth who are, you know, coming into our demographic.
I have a plan. Henry Kissinger, of course, kept working till he was 99. And so I've got that plan as well. So I'm hoping to see you when you pass beyond youth and become a national and global leader. I'm hoping I will still hear those messages of optimism and those compelling visions you bring to the Commonwealth. So when we think about CHOGM in Samoa, what message of optimism, what compelling visions do you believe that you and your friends, the other youth of the Pacific, Oceania, if you like, will bring to the fore? And, you know, in the communique of the leaders, will there be some of those wonderful expressions of a compelling vision and that optimism of youth?
If I could summarize our overall message, not only as a task force, but also as a country and hopefully as a forum when we've completed this year's youth forum. One word, continuity. That's what we hope for. That's what we want to introduce. Continuity is very important in the Samoan culture, as well as in a lot of Polynesian societies and cosmologies. Continuity being the passing of the torch. We like to think about, someone mentioned a few weeks ago, the 100-year plan, which is that what you plant today, your children and grandchildren and the next generation will reap. I think it was Tawili'ili Alpha Mayava, who's a documentary maker and Pacifica artist that I absolutely adore. He introduced us to the 100-year plan, and that's something that I really want to take with me and something that I know is very central to our Indigenous belief systems, but also the way that we work as a country and as a Pacifica region. Continuity. I think it's something we could teach the rest of the world, to be honest. It's really nice to have all these high-level meetings and take all our photos for social media, but continuity, are we still going to be pushing for these projects, for these improvements in the next 5, 10, 15, 50 years? Continuity, it's also a standard that we as a task force hold ourselves to. I love how you said you'd like to see where we will be in the next 40, 50 years when we hopefully become regional and world leaders. Continuity, what we say today, we continue saying, and we pass on to the next generation to continue.
I work in water utilities and water innovation. And we often at the board meetings, we talk about what will be our 100-year legacy. You know, the water systems for the delivery of drinking water, for taking away people's sanitation, it's 100 years. And so I love that about what you do. Now, you work in the education system, and yes, I'm a big fan of the OECD, which says we should be teaching young people optimism explicitly. So as you look up, when I've been in Samoa, you know, to see the young children in schools and to see them playing in the yards, to see them on the street, you feel that the future of Samoa will be strong, that sort of sense of the future. So what do you see? You've talked about it being under-resourced and it being developed. So what's the role of the education system in building a more prosperous and stronger Samoa?
For me as an educator, the role of the education system in my country is first of all to instill a sense of sustainable optimism. I like to think about optimism as something which is good to have, but which, like a battery, can also run out. You know, there's only so much joy and happiness and drive that we can have. Sometimes we get discouraged, particularly if you're living in an under-resourced, developing part of the world, like Samoa. So just instilling in our young people sustainable optimism, it was something my late parents believed very strongly in. Sustainable optimism, which leads to resilience. We've got resilience as one of the pillars and touchstones of our upcoming forum. Every single session is resilient something, resilient economies, resilient environment. All of those things can only come into being and come to fruition if we've got resilient human beings. So for me, that's the role of the education system in Samoa, my role as one of the educators within.
As you can hear, our internet connection started to decline, as sometimes happens in Australia just as much as in Samoa. So we decided that we just keep it in the podcast. Have a listen. If it doesn't work for you, we'll be doing another one another time. But we just thought the content was so valuable and so interesting. It was worth keeping despite the slightly garbled voice caused by the internet. It does clear up later. Worth listening to. Great content from Jasmine.
For me as an educator, but also as a product of Samoa's local education system, I think it's really important for us to instill sustainable optimism in our young people. Because we are under-resourced and we're still a developing country, sustainable optimism is one of the easiest and most immediate things that we can give our youth. It's a philosophy that my late parents used in their almost three decades of work in teaching. I really appreciated the idea of sustainable optimism when I had to go to New Zealand for university. I was 17 years old. I was cold in Wellington. I was homesick. I wasn't used to the food. And that was when I really thought, if I don't have the kind of optimism which is here today, here tomorrow, which I can still count on when I've got a bad grade on an assignment, when I've left something to the last minute and I need to do it yesterday, I'm not going to make it to graduation. So just a sense of continuity. For me, sustainable optimism isn't always about being happy and, you know, it's a great day. I mean, it's nice if students have a good day. I certainly hope my students have mostly good days in the school year, but just ingraining in them a sense of sustainable optimism is something which I think also helps them to cope with the fact that we are under-resourced. When I talk about Samoa and the developing Oceania being under-resourced, I talk about things like the science labs, the libraries. We have books in a lot of our libraries, which came out in the year 1945 and should not be in use anymore. And yet this is all we have. It's what's been given to us by a lot of our donors. I talk also about the fact that a lot of schools don't have enough desks and chairs for the students to sit at. Sustainable optimism is giving my students the hope that maybe I'm sitting on the floor today, but I am going to have a good future. I am going to be able to, for lack of a better phrase, get out of here someday. Sustainable optimism, I think, is also important when we're talking about education in a place like Samoa for us as educators. You know, we've had the experience of sharing one whiteboard or blackboard duster between teachers of four or five classes. If your whiteboard marker runs out of ink, it's going next door and asking your neighbor for, you know, a marker, which is going to be shared by two or three people as well. Sustainable optimism, you know, we can laugh together about the fact that we only have one whiteboard marker. Not that it's funny, but we have that sort of resilience where we can say, I love the fact that we're sharing this, and tomorrow we'll probably have two or three more markers and we can each have our own. So just that sustainable sense of being able, I feel like optimism gives our youth agency.
Yeah.
The ability to keep moving.
You remind me of my mother. You remind me of my mother because she was a refugee twice and widowed twice, and she always told the stories with laughter. You know, it was even the worst things were shared with laughter. So what you say there about that ability to live through the tough stuff and laugh about it and find the joy in life. And happiness is overrated. You know, happiness is 100 things. But when I look at the flower in your hair and the light, you know, each time you pass someone with a flower in their hair or a colourful Samoan dress or shirt, it makes you smile.
Yes. I very recently came to appreciate the saying,
I used to think it was overrated when I was in secondary school and very busy, but I appreciate the way, as I mentioned before, flowers are also very resilient. You know, every day there's a new flower that you can go out and pick. And for me, on my way to school, I have to pick up a, say, you know, whether it's an artificial one just from my collection or outside growing on the poetry in front of my house. It reminds me to keep going, and just like there'll be another flower tomorrow, there'll be another opportunity tomorrow as well.
So let's turn to, you know, this is significant. You know, it's the first time Chogham is being held in a small island state. And, you know, when I heard it, I thought, oh, gosh, what a challenge that they will step up to. And I believe it's the King's first visit to Samoa. I was quite surprised to read that. So that Samoan cultural resilience you wrote about in an article recently, which I think is pronounced Matimatiga, isn't it? What will that do in shaping this Chogham?
Matimatiga, as I understand it, is about continuity. And we have had members of the royal family visit Samoa before, members of various royal families from around the world. But I think this is definitely our first big opportunity to host a platform of this global magnitude. Matimatiga is as much for us as it is for the rest of the Commonwealth. The Commonwealth is about continuity. You know, we all have different histories with the Commonwealth, and it's something that I'm very mindful of, not only with my membership in the CYF Task Force, but also in my practice as a history teacher. The way in which some of our countries in Oceania came to be parts of the Commonwealth. There's a colonial history there. So for me personally, Matimatiga is about continuity of the good, of the positive, of what we can harness to fuel our optimism together, in spite of the fact that we do as a region have a very colorful history with not only the Commonwealth, but specifically the British Empire. But I, as I said before, I think in terms of continuity, it's definitely something we hope the rest of the world will take from us. I know that not every region of the Commonwealth has the same nature-based indigenous, we call it anafanua, connection to the land that we have in Polynesia, particularly in Samoa, but it's something that we hope they might be able to incorporate into their leadership journey or their personal lives. You know, I know somebody like the King is in a very high level leadership position, but he's also a person. And at the end of the day, we hope it's something that maybe he can take a little bit of hope and a little bit of joy from the fact that he's doing an important work, but also a work which needs to have continuity when it passes to the next monarch.
I looked at where the King is staying, and last year my daughter and I stayed in a hotel that was next door to where the King is staying. And what I didn't realise when I booked the accommodation was that that side of the island, a little bit over a decade ago, suffered from an earthquake and a 15-metre tsunami, which killed hundreds of people and destroyed so much of the infrastructure. And yet, talking to the men and the women who had survived it and have rebuilt the schools and rebuilt the roads and rebuilt the water systems and sanitation systems and emergency warning systems, it was beyond sustainable optimism. It was what Viktor Frankl talks about, tragic optimism or radical optimism. It was just, as you talk to these people, they didn't deny the tragedy of what happened, but they were looking forward, as you said, to the next 100 years for their children and their grandchildren and their great-grandchildren. Now, I know you visited that area, you know the area well. How is it that Samoans can go through such tragedy and yet have such extraordinary personal optimism and community optimism?
It's definitely radical optimism. The first thing I know is that whatever we go through it together. I was with my extended family on the night of the tsunami. We all got together at my uncle's house, and we had about four loaves of bread. It's almost 30 of us. We were happy. We were happy because we were all together. We had all survived the tragic events of the morning. It's really an optimism that draws on what we do have. Something I did not hear growing up in Samoa is the phrase, "I give up because I can't." That's something that was introduced to me when I started to travel around the world, particularly when I went overseas for my undergraduate studies. I would hear people saying, "I give up because I can't, because I don't have enough." And I fully respect the fact that we all go through different experiences. The scenarios are sometimes unique, but something I didn't hear growing up, "I give up because I can't, or because I don't have enough." We like to look at what we do have, and we work together to harness the potential of what we do have. One thing I learned growing up in Samoa, which I know is what has been drawn on by our people on that side of the island, is the fact that if we have a community, we've got something. If we have a community, we've got something. And what I know about that side of the island, and this is one of the main reasons why people continue to live there, despite obviously the danger that still exists because of the geographical positioning, is again the connection to the land. Our cultures are very connected to the land, and going back to the 100-year plan, that is communally owned land. It is land that their children and their grandchildren are going to have to inherit. And displacement is very difficult and very grave in Polynesian societies. And displacement primarily occurs when you don't have a place to call home. And so they are resilient because they're looking forward. As we talked about earlier, it's not that they're happy, you know, despite the tsunami. It's tragic. There was a lot of death, a lot of loss, a lot of destruction. But the fact that they've got their land, the fact that the land is still there, despite the sea's very best efforts, they've got everything. They've got something. So they keep going back to build, and they're building for their children and their grandchildren. In Samoa, our families are very important. Our lafa, or our genealogy. Failure to build for your children is a, for lack of a better phrase, grave sin in Samoa. You've got to leave something behind for your children, whether it's a plot of land next to the sea where the tsunami happened. There's got to be something somewhere for them to call home. We're very land and environment focused. We say etelea o tangata, meaning people have many roots, just like the tree. And if there's no land, the tree can't put its roots down and it can't grow.
That is so beautiful. Last year I had a lovely time with Brenda Heather Latouk, who, amongst other things, was the first woman judge of rugby. But when we talked, she was talking about, she talked about liquid optimism. You know, there's this power of the Samoans. So when we talk about sustainable optimism, liquid optimism, the optimism of those people who went through such incredible tragedy, how will that inspire the world? How can we help to make that? Because oftentimes CHOGM and international fora these days are full of negativity. As you said, woe is me.
Yes.
So how can we make them feel more positive and do stuff rather than moan about what's absent?
I think that's one of those existential questions that we're still trying to find a good conclusive answer to. For me personally, growing up in under-resourced developing part of Oceania, I think even if there are complaints and people are feeling tired and saying they're feeling tired, it's just about keeping on. And that's one thing that I would hope that the world can learn from us. You know, our processes are not perfect. We're not perfect. We do complain sometimes of tired, the meeting's not starting on time, we don't have enough money for this or that. That's a universal thing. We're human. But I think to keep going amidst the complaints and amidst the feeling tired, that is something that I would definitely identify with, and I would encourage, and what the rest of the world can take from us. I don't think any group of people, whether it's Samoa or any other Pacific, are like happy 24/7. You know, we have our bad days, and sometimes lots of them, especially if you work in education like me. But just keeping on, and continuing, you know, matinga, the 100-year plan, on to the next. Even if you are feeling discouraged, just having that little light or the little voice in your head that reminds you, tomorrow's another day. It's where also for you.
Now, we've all got to know what to bring in our suitcases to Samoa, and your Prime Minister said that we delegates, including the King, should dump our business suits, that we'll be sweating in the October heat, and we should get the island vibe. Now, I'll admit I have 4 very bright coloured Samoan shirts, which I bought at a beautiful shop in Apia, and I was even mistaken for a local. A fellow who came across from American Samoa said, "Are you a local?" And I thought, well, maybe my waistline and my shirt fits me. So what are your hints for the delegates on dressing for success in Samoa? I will certainly follow the Prime Minister, and I will be wearing Samoan.
Yes, please do. We have our, particularly for men, the Aua shirts, which are very breathable, movable. It is not only hot in Samoa, it is very humid. Interestingly, it also rains a lot. So before anything else, please buy or bring an umbrella with you. Our weather is pretty unpredictable, especially this time of the year. It's October. Trouble is going to happen in like late October. We are getting closer to cyclone season. So umbrella. First things first, umbrella. I think secondly, dress for comfort. I know we all want to wear the island vibe, but if it's not something that you want to do, please don't feel pressured. If you have to wear something for religious purposes or because it's part of your self-expression, please do, please do. We would love to see you wearing some of our island brands, though. If we've got time. Well, I also want to encourage people, please go and check out our flea markets. Please go downtown and have a look. We've got amazing vendors. There's a lot of youth entrepreneurs who sew, who do LA printing, and they sell every day of the week down at the market every day, except Sunday, mind you. So if you are coming to Samoa a little bit early, please do go check them out. The prices are very good. You can definitely bargain with our vendors. But we would love to see our children guests supporting the local enterprise as one way to help our country develop. And you know what, people are very optimistic at the market. They'd love to have a chat about you, ask you how your day is going. They'd love to tell you the history behind some of the prints and the patterns that they're using. Colors to wear in Samoa. We wear a lot of bright colors. Today I'm wearing a dark color, but bright colors definitely will do. Best to also get yourself a pair of jandals, or sebaikosokoso, as we call them in Samoa, just because you might be doing a lot of walking along beachfront. Your Nike and Adidas shoes will probably cause you to sweat more, and you don't want to damage those. It is kind of muddy in Samoa at this time of year, so get yourself a pair of flip-flops, that's what we also call them, flip-flops, jandals, sandals. For the ladies, if you're going to wear heels, I advise you probably wear your flip-flops to the venue and put your heels on. That's what I do, because, again, it is kind of muddy. Now, soil is very nice and fertile. It's also very moist. You do not want your heels to bury themselves in the Samoan soil. So just a little heads up on that. Again, we also do have our cultural protocols, which we hope our delegates will be respectful of. We generally wear longer, more free-flowing with higher necklines, particularly for women, if you are going into a formal space. So just those. Again, if anyone does want to wear their suits because it makes you feel comfortable and empowered, please do so. But we hope you will join us in our island fashion, which, again, you can get at the flea markets. please support our local vendors. I can't say that enough. Please support our local vendors.
I promise to do it. I will wear yellow and my bright yellow and orange Samoan shirt. So I will bring them back and buy some new ones. And I found even on a Sunday, I was walking very early in the morning and saw all these cars driving into the bus depot. And so I walked over and there was the fish market with the most beautiful seafood, even on a Sunday morning, and coconuts and vegetables and drinks and snacks. And I am a huge fan of your markets and your local commerce. Now, we better move to the last couple of questions. So, as I shared with you, the optimism principle, we've done 10 years of research on optimism, and we now say the optimism principle is the answer to life's most pressing questions is optimism. As you say, sustainable optimism, as our friend Brenda would say, liquid optimism. What's your take on that? The answer to life's most pressing questions requires optimism.
I think if I was to put that simply, it's just the answer to the most pressing, difficult questions, even if you don't have an answer, is to keep going, just to stay hopeful. I've definitely encountered a lot of challenges, not only in my professional journey as a young person in Samoa, but also in my personal journey. I lost both my parents one after the other, and I'll always remember the fact that I applied for the master's scholarship that I now have while I was at the funeral home waiting for them to bring my mom out. I didn't have an answer for how I was going to deal with the grief, or what am I going to do tomorrow, or how long is it going to take me to go back to work. But I just pushed myself to keep on going. And I'm so thankful I did, because I applied just in time and I got it. So the answer to it, if you don't have any other answer, it's not a technical, jargon-filled one. It's just keep believing. I feel like you can still be optimistic if you're crying about a loss in your family, or if you're feeling down after a hard day at work. Optimism to me is just continuing to try. So just try.
You sound like Nelson Mandela, who said, I'm an optimist. I don't know whether it's nature or nurture. I just know it's keeping your face to the sun and one foot stepping in front of the other.
I love Nelson Mandela. So that's one of the best compliments I've ever received. I love him a lot.
Now, last week, the University of Sydney Business School published research based on 20 years of OECD data that optimism is the key to country and company productivity and innovation. So, you know how all the misery guts come to Chogham and they complain, the misery. What can you young people tell the oldies? How can optimism drive productivity and innovation in the Pacific?
As I said, firstly, because in this part of the world, optimism is about keeping on going. I think that's something that we as youth are very good at, because we're very dynamic and we have a lot of energy and we like to be always in motion, always moving. So that's something we definitely hope our other forums can learn from us, not only as a demographic, but as a forum. I love how you mentioned that there is a lot of complaining at these kinds of meetings. I think it's important. I think that fuels the optimism. Before we can use our optimism to find the right solutions to problems, we have to hear what the problem is. You know, I personally love to hear, how is it affecting people? Who is it affecting? How long has it been affecting people? Sometimes people just need to complain about what's happening to them in order for a solution to be found. That's something I've learned in my very short leadership journey. So, like, secondly, it's where can we go after the complaints? In Samoa, we have this saying, when the meeting's been going on for like 2-3 hours and there's a lot of complaining, people talking, we say, well, we've been following, meaning the mats are warm, we've been sitting for a long time, let's move to the next thing, let's move to the next thing. So I think it's also knowing, when do we stop complaining and when can we harness our complaints to find a hopefully common solution. But I think complaints are good. I think complaints are informative. Some people have a more constructive way of complaining than others. That's something I've come to appreciate in my short leadership journey at Samoa. But I think it's looking beyond how they're complaining and seeing what it is that they are complaining about. Some people have a very forward, sometimes brash way of complaining because they've raised the issue so many times and nothing is being done about it. I've seen this a lot with people who campaign for climate change, for social justice, for reforms in the education sector like we do. Sometimes you have to speak a little bit louder in order to be heard. So that's just my take on it. I look forward to hearing complaints at Chauvin, to be honest.
Well, you've taught me something additional too. I always need people to reinforce, Victor, complaints are not so bad because then you can identify the problems and come up with solutions. So I am already grateful for you reinforcing that lesson. So the last question I have for you is for the people who are listening who are just enchanted with what you've said on sustainable optimism and just keep going, what are the tips and tricks that people who don't live on Samoa can use to improve their daily lives?
For me personally, I just repeat the phrase of keep on going. I think we all live on our own corners of the globe. We have our own cultures, our own lived experiences. We have our own languages as well, our own religious beliefs, our own philosophies. But whatever it is that gives you hope, I encourage you to hold on to that. For me, having grown up in Samoa and grown up in a very strong Christian family, my faith is definitely something that gives me hope. Again, I appreciate that we all have different beliefs. So if you have found something that gives you not only hope, but a sense of purpose, I'd encourage you to really connect with it and to use that to draw strength from that. I feel like what we believe in is deeply ingrained in our subconscious. It reflects itself in the way we work. So really connect with what it is that you believe in. And I just want to particularly encourage any young people who are on here listening, please don't give up. I think it's very easy for us as youth, you know, when a door closes in our face, we don't get the job that we applied for, we don't get into the university that we wanted to be at. Sometimes we feel like giving up. It's okay to be discouraged. You know, discouragement is an important part of our learning experience, personally and professionally. Sometimes you want to have a good cry about it. Go ahead. I've had a lot of very good cries. That's why I'm able to function every day. But keep going. You don't know whether your next application is going to be the one that gets you the fellowship or the scholarship or the grant or the job opportunity that you wanted. As we say, it's very cliche, but I think it's true. Rejection is redirection. I've lost count of how many rejection letters I received, which I've looked back on after 2-3 years and thought, it's a really good thing I didn't get that job or I didn't get that scholarship, because now I have this. There's always something coming your way. You just got to look out for it. Take everything in your stride. I know that's easier said than done, but it's a skill that I've had to learn and which I hope other young people can also learn and appreciate.
Brilliant. My masterclasses I teach, I call it magnetic optimism. An optimism so tangible and a vision so compelling that you want to reach out and touch it. And I believe you already have magnetic optimism. And over
that's
the,
very kind of you. Thank you.
You are wonderful. So over the next decades, I look forward. Well, I thought next month, I look forward to your leadership at Chogham, and over the decades to come, I look forward to you blossoming, not just as a leader of Samoa and the Oceania, but I look forward to you blossoming as a real global leader, because you do understand that you have the patience to listen to complaint and then the wisdom to find the positivity for solutions. So I'm deeply grateful for your time and your passion and your purpose and your joy and your optimism. Jasmine, thank you.
Thank you, Father. Tell love more love know, as we say in Psalm. Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak, but also to learn from your wisdom. I'm very honored that you wanted to have me on your podcast. I've also read a lot about your leadership journey. It's very inspiring, and I thank leaders like yourself who make time to listen to the next generation of hopefully future leaders. It's something that we aspire to. But Faftai Telelava, thank you for the work that you've done, and we look forward to continuing that. You know, the generations that come before us build the foundation. So thank you for your contribution to building that foundation for Oceania and the world. I appreciate it deeply.
I think that's a good conclusion. Thank you. And listeners, I think you follow Jasmine Correa and her generation of young Pacific leaders who lead with positivity and can show us older people that the sun, whatever goes wrong, that the sun will still rise tomorrow. And whether we wear flowers in our hair or wear the colours of yellow and orange that epitomise joy, that we can find joy in the everyday, and joy in drafting good policy, and joy in implementing good policy. Jasmine, listeners, thank you so much.
Thank you.